So tonight we talk. We are going to discuss about what's called the tradition of you. Let me tell you a little bit about the story. We are going to talk about somebody called Rav Yitzchak Isaac Halevi. Rav Yitzchak Isaac Halevi is the author of a great work. It's called Dorot HaRishonim. When I met Professor David Weiss Halevi the first time, he told me, I started arguing with him, and because I was coming from a yeshiva, you have what's called the tradition of you. He says, listen, if you have the tradition of you, you have to learn Dorot HaRishonim. And my first work for him was to basically summarize Dorot HaRishonim. And Dorot HaRishonim is a, I will talk to you a little bit about the work, but he told me when I wrote finally my dissertation, I wrote contrasting the Dorot HaRishonim view to the rest of the other views. And he told me that this was the fulfillment of a promise because he learned when he came from Second World War, he came to Chaim Berlin and he was learning under Rav Yitzchak Kuttner. And Rav Yitzchak Kuttner, so he told Rav Kuttner that he decided to go into academia to go and to become a scholar. So Rav Kuttner tells him, one second, if you are going to be a scholar, you're going to study history, why don't you learn Dorot HaRishonim? So he promised Rav Kuttner that he'll do that. And Professor Halevi told me that he never did it. So he says, tells me that I'm his way of fulfilling that promise about it. So that's the story. And Rav Yitzchak Isaac Halevi wrote Dorot HaRishonim. You'll see his story is a very interesting story. He was born in 1847. He learned in Volozhin, in the Yeshiva Volozhin. He wrote a sefer called Batim Lebadim, which is a Lomdus sefer. And he was very close to the Beit Halevi. He was the Rosh Yeshiva in Volozhin. And he became buddies, really great friends with Reb Chaim Brisker. Him and Reb Chaim Brisker were very good friends. And he always said to himself that his rabbis were the Mishneh LeMelech and the Noida Behuda. Meaning he was a self-taught person. Okay? He has a great line. When they brought to him the Ner Lishmonim, okay? The Ner Lishmonim was a sefer, Rabbi Yosef Engel, who gave 80 terutzim to the Beis Yosef's kasha on Hanukkah. You know, the Beis Yosef has a famous question on Hanukkah. Why do we have a miracle for 8 days? If there was enough oil for one day, you should have only 7 days of a miracle. So he wrote 80 terutzim. It's called Ner Lishmonim. So they brought to Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Halevi, he said, listen, it's not a kunz to give 80 terutzim to a kasha. What it's a kunz is to have a terutz that answers 80 kashas. Okay? And this is his approach. Okay? He's an interesting person. He was a businessman. He had a tea wholesaler business up to 1895 when he decided to go into a venture to open a tea exchange. And the tea exchange didn't work. So that went bankrupt. And at that time, he had to leave Vilna, and he went into Germany to try to raise money to pay his debts. Tonight is Reb Chaim Oizer Grudzinski's Yahrzeit. And interestingly enough, we're going to see that the one who inspired, I saw in one of the letters, one of the people, probably the main person who inspired Reb Yitzchak Isaac Halevi to write Dorot HaRishonim was Reb Chaim Oizer Grudzinski, the Rav of Vilna. So what happened was that he decided to go to Germany and decided to write something to be able to make money, to pay his debts. So he thought to himself, if I print my Batim Labadim, my Lomdus HaSefer, I ain't going to make a lot of money. So he said, you know something? I will write something in the style of the Germans, using Wissenschaft, using the Jewish science of Judentums, the science of Judaism, to write on the academic side. And this sefer that he came up with, it's a collection on Jewish history, is an amazing work. Rav Moshe Shapiro was just telling me that the Maskilim, he wrote that book, is an apologetic book. You'll see, it's an apology. He's trying to defend Torah Judaism against the historians of that time. Hirsch was he was a Talmud Chochem that became an Apikoiris. And No, Gretz is not. Gretz wasn't so bad. The Hirsch was the big one. Hirsch wrote a book called Dor, Dor V'Dorshav. Dor, Dor V'Dorshav is a biography of the rabbis of the Talmud. And this person is very interesting. Hirsch, he was a big Talmud Chacham, and he actually wrote one of the Sifro that came out was with his approbation. He was the one who brought it and got many askomes. But he wrote Dor, Dor V'Dorshav, Yitzchak Isaac Hirsch, and it became a extremely popular book. It was printed in so many editions in Europe, and Bachurei Yeshiva were reading it. So Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Halevi decided to see it and know something. He needed to pay his debts. He's going to write something. He says, I'm going to defend Torah Judaism, write a historical work to compete with Gretz, but compete mainly with Dor, Dor V'Dorshav. That was his main competition, to try to bring Torah true approach to Jewish history. And the reality, Rabbi Shapira told me, because of the maskilim, because of the Haskalah, and because of all of these people involved in Wissenschaft who were there with a very, very defined agenda, and their agenda was to validate reform, to discredit yeshiva. Because of that, there were two books that came out that really changed Yiddishkeit forever, and it was so important. So we have to thank Haskalah for that. One of them is the Malbim. The Malbim came as a defense of Midrashic learning, and he revolutionized our meaning. Who today doesn't learn the Malbim? And the second one was Dorot HaRishonim, the work of Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Halevi on Jewish history. Okay? Now, he publishes the first one in 1897, and the one who encouraged him, who inspired him, is Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Chaim Moshe Grudzinski, who's yours at this night. He was the Rav of Vilna. He encouraged him to write. And the way how he starts, it's a very funny sefer, the way how it's written, but he starts from volume 3. It's 5 volumes, but he starts from volume 3. Because he's talking about the formation of the Bavli. He saw Dor, Dor V'Dorshav and his approach. He saw Gretz, Henrik Gretz, and his approach. And they were historians, but they were not Talmudists. They did not know the Talmud. And he went against Frankel and against so many other people who we thought were not the right spokesman to Torah Jewry, to understand the formation of the Bavli. So he focused on the history of the Bavli, and that's what we're going to decide tonight. He is the one who wrote Jewish history to try to make sense of how the Bavli came to be. His work is apologetic, and you're going to soon see that he had a very clear agenda, and we're going to be honest and to say what we think is good and what we think is difficult to accept. I'll tell you just a little story. Before I decided to write on Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Halevi, it was a very interesting story because his sefer, Dorot HaRishonim, did anybody ever see Dorot HaRishonim? And the answer is, very few people saw it. Because even though he came to defend the traditional view, the sefer was never reprinted. So it says in the Mibeito Shel Harav, there is a book that talks about the stipler. And that book says the following story, that Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Halevi's son came to the Chazon Ish to get permission to reprint the Dorot HaRishonim, which by that time was not available. And the Chazon Ish told him not to reprint for two reasons. Number one reason, because he deals with all of the complaints and all of the tainess of the maskilim. And the Chazon Ish was of the view, if people are not bothered by it, why should you bring to yeshiva boys what Gretz and Hirsch and all these guys were bothered by? That's it. Let them lay low. And the second reason is because he argues with Rishonim. He argues with the early authorities because he says the early Rishonim were not historians. That's not their job. Their job was to explain Gemara, Rashi, Tosfos. They're not historians. And Chazon Ish, according to what says in Beito Shel Harav, that's not proper. And I thought to myself, that's very funny. Because the Chazonish himself argues with the Rishonim. So oh, he has a title, the Rishon Kazakalim argues with the Rishonim. But I had the problem, right? Because I was going to write something, and I wanted to bring Rabbi Yitzchok Isaac Halevi back to the yeshiva. And back, because I think the book is so important. But if the Chazon Ish told not to print, I'm not going to go against the Chazon Ish. So I was debating. Look at the story. I think I mentioned to you this story before. I was here in Lawrence one day, and somebody comes to collect money. Like, I'm sure that everybody has the experience of having people coming to collect money. So this guy comes to collect money, and I start talking to him. He says he comes with the Kohel Chazon Ish. Not the Kohel Chazon Ish, the Tashbar Chazon Ish. Chazon Ish didn't have children. So in his home, he donated his home to open a Tashbar. He opened a cheder in his house. So they're collecting the money. And what the story is, who is the one who runs the Tashbar Chazon Ish? A guy called Halevi. I said, is he related to Rabbi Yitzchok Isaac Halevi? He says, yes, it's his grandson. He says, 1 second, Rabbi Yitzchok Isaac's grandson runs the Tashbar Chazon Ish, meaning he's the Chazon Ish, he's the one who told his father not to print the Sefer. So I have to speak to the person. So listen, I'll give you the money, but I want to talk to Halevi, who runs. So I speak to Halevi, calls me, he's an older man. He indeed is the one who runs. They became very close to the Chazon Ish. Actually, all the children, grandchildren became Chazon Ishtikim. There may be some that did become Frum, but from Shmuel, the son, they became a Chazon Ishtikim. I asked him the question. I said, listen, is it true that the Chazon Ish did not allow to reprint the Sefer? He says, listen, I was there in that meeting. I came with my father to the Chazon Ish, and the Chazon Ish told us not to reprint the Sefer was only because of the issues brought by the Maskilim. He had no problem with the fact that Rabbi Yitzchok Isaac Halevi argued with the Rishonim. So I asked him specifically, would the Chazon Ish have a problem if I go ahead and bring back the ideas of Rabbi Yitzchok Isaac Halevi without quoting all the kashyas of the Maskilim? He says, absolutely. He says, well, I have a green light. Told him, listen, he tells me, I was there. So there's no story, there's no translation. I was by the Chazon Ish, and I'm the one who runs the Tashbar in his house. Chazon Ish had no problem. Funnily enough, I'm just going to tell you that when you start doing research, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky quotes the same story, and Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky only quotes the fact that he doesn't like the Dor Rishonim. Why? Because he argues with Rishonim. So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky would have a problem like that, but Chazon Ish didn't have a problem because Chazon Ish himself, listen, Chazon Ish himself, anybody who learns, he argued with Rishonim. So I decided to write and to bring it back. Actually, my dissertation is going to be published in Hebrew now because I think it's extremely important for Yeshiva Bochum to learn who Rabbi Yitzchok Isaac Halevi was and his approach to the formation of the Bavli. Now, but I was going to argue with Rabbi Yitzchok Isaac Halevi, which I do, and I'm going to show you the problems that I have. So I felt that I had to get actually permission from Rabbi Yitzchok Isaac Halevi. So that's another story that decided to go to Hamburg to look for his kever, to ask permission. I come to the cemetery. It's like a funny story, I just won't tell you. I come to the cemetery, and we made an appointment to open the cemetery. But as you could imagine, for sure the guy wasn't there. So I come in, so the cemetery is locked. And I flew all the way in, my son-in-law, I myself, and a friend of mine, to see, and the thing is closed. So we decided to jump over. What's the problem? We jump over the cemetery. I look at the cemetery, and there are thousands of graves. And all the graves are grown, and it's a cemetery that wasn't taken care of, so you couldn't even read the tombstones. So my son-in-law is like, he says, 1 second, we're never going to find this. So you could get the permission from him. Who cares? You have to go to his cabin when you have the permission. But I felt like, listen, I have to go and get permission because I'm going to argue. And I'm telling you something that's amazing. I look at the cavern, and I told my son, that's the cavern. I felt that the cavern like was screaming for me. I go, and I found out the cavern. I'm telling you, I didn't even have to look for two. I found the one cavern, and one was very interesting because he has a very big tombstone. And I actually, now we decided to go ahead and to clean up the tombstone and to really bring it because he's a very interesting person we're going to see. But his matzeva is a very long matzeva, so that's why I knew there had to be a very big matzeva. And the one who wrote his matzeva was Rav Kook. He was very close to Rav Kook. They were together involved when he decided. It's so interesting how God makes the world, right? If not that he went bankrupt in this like tea exchange, he would have been and he would open a tea exchange and be a tea merchant and wouldn't have Dorot HaShonim. But God had to make him write Dorot HaShonim, made sure that the tea exchange didn't work, looked like cryptocurrencies at that time, like there were tea exchanges. The tea exchange didn't work. He had to raise money and he writes Dorot HaShonim. But interestingly enough, not only he writes the Dorot HaShonim, as you see very clearly the parallel, he decides at the same time, and we're going to explore how, that the Jewish Orthodox community needed to organize and to get together into some kind of a conclave, into some kind of a unified body. And he's the one who comes up with the idea of the Agudat Israel. In Agudat Israel, he actually speaks to Rav Kook about it. And they decide to open. And if you know, the first meeting of the Aguda was actually in his house in 1909, anybody who knows the Aguda, the history of the Aguda, he's the architect of the Aguda, and he's the one who does the first meeting of the Agudat Israel. He calls Rav Chaim Brisker, who was his friend. Rav Chaim Moiser was the one who encouraged. He called the Gerer Rebbe. And his view was you have to have a unified body to deal with the issues of the time. And that becomes Agudat Israel. So it's interesting that Aguda was a joint product between him and Rav Kook was very involved. So how the world is. And this is the story. But now, why did he decide? You see that he approaches the formation of the Bavli in a very interesting way, in the same manner how the Aguda came about. And that's what we're going to explore tonight. We're going to explore. Now, we don't have much time, so we'll try to give as much as possible. We're going to show you the reach and the depth of his approach. The way how we're going to do is the following, okay? If you look in the English handout, you do have on page... you have a timeline, and I want to follow the timeline. And the timeline's on page 4, okay? And let me tell you, and we have to look at the sources because we're going to go through the sources. The Bavli writes, with source number 1, the Bavli writes in Baba Metzia, in Daf Pei Vav 86a, Rebbe Verav Natan Sof Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Nossi and Rabbi Natan, with the famous author of Avot Rabbi Natan, was a comparator of Rebbe. Sof Mishnah. They are the end of the Mishnah. Ravashi Veravina. Now the question is how the Girsa goes. And Shas Cohen has a whole thing. Is it Ravina and Ravashi or Ravashi and Ravina? We're going to see why is that important. If Ravina comes before, Ravashi comes afterwards. Sof Horah. They are the end of Horah. Never says that's the end of the Bavli. It says the end of what? Horah. Horah is teaching. The end of Horah doesn't say that he edited, that he composed, or that he compiled. Rabbi Yitzchok Isaac Halevi is the one who basically takes the assumption that here we're just opposing Rebbe to Ravashi. And he wants to say, and now you'll see that this is the clear, that the same editing, compiling process of the Mishnah went through the Bavli. The Bavli was also, as we spoke last week, the Mishnah was compiled in a conclave, was done deliberate, was a process. There was an editor, which is called Rabbi Yehuda HaNossi. He was the editor who convened a court, and there was a decision, and there was a process, and there was a sealing. Because the Mishnah, the Gemara compares both Rabbi Natan and Rebbe to Ravashi and Ravina, Rabbi Yitzchok Isaac Halevi is going to say the same process went through the Bavli. Now, you have to understand in context. He is trying to argue with Hirsch, with Gretz. He is trying to go against the Reform movement, right? This is the beginning of the Reform. He wanted to say that the Bavli is a foregone conclusion. There was a process, an editing, a sealing, a conclusion done by a conclave of rabbis. That you can't argue with it anymore. This is the same process that Rabbi Elchanan in Kovetz Ashurim, in Kovetz Bichtovim, in the famous letter of his, he also says the Bavli was a decision of the Sanhedrin. There was a Sanhedrin convened, the Paschim, that you listen to the Bavli. Because they wanted to make the authority of the Bavli supreme with a decision. So he's going to say, because the Bavli never says such a thing. And his history of the Bavli is based on this. Now, his idea for it to be valid, it had to be like Rabbi Yehuda Anossi. Rabbi Yehuda Anossi convened a conclave of rabbis, of all the rabbis of the generation. That's called Minyona de Rebbe. So he had to say that the Bavli also was convened by a conclave of all the rabbis who created some kind of a aguda to make a decision. So he creates this amorphous, non-existing body called the Beit Avad. He calls that the Bavli was edited in a central location by a conclave of rabbis, exactly the same the Aguda, like there was Muetzet Gdolei HaTorah that decided on the Bavli. That's why it's very interesting that he comes out with the Aguda idea at the same time the Muetzet Gdolei HaTorah. So, you see, the Siyum HaShas belongs to the Aguda because according to Rabbi Yitzchok Isaac Halevi, the Bavli belongs to the Aguda. So, like, it goes together. Now, which one is the first? I don't know. Meaning, once you go into Jewish history, you realize that causality is the most difficult thing to ever understand. But there is no question. There is a merging of the minds. The person who came up with the Muetzes Gdolei HaTorah in his house says that the Bavli was created by this Beit Avad. And his process is that the Bavli was done in four steps. Those are the famous four steps of the Bavli. And his idea was the following. And I'll tell you something that he says, which is probably the greatest contribution that he did, and is something that all of us must know. His view is the following, which all scholars agree. That first, initially, when they came to Babylonia, there were disciple circles. Every Amora had his own Talmidim, his own students, and they learned in different locales. And when they had a Dvar Torah, when they had a Chidush, it was kept by their students. The students were the carriers of the tradition. And this you see in the Gemara. You see something called the double attribution. Omar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. Something called the direct double attribution. Rav Yehuda says that Rav said. It's like, so what does that mean? It means Rav Yehuda is a Talmud of Rav. And he is the spokesman for Rav. He says, I heard from Rav and he told me, carry those ideas forward. And they were done separately. They were a Beis Medrash of Rav, there was the Beis Medrash of Shmuel, in various places. The one who created the Bavli, the Loshon the Bavli comes from Loshon Balul, Tosfot already says, is something that is merged, is something that's mixed. The one who created a unified body of language, that they collected all the Amoraic traditions and brought it together in almost a virtual Beis Medrash, this is the chidush of two people, in his view. Who are the people? It's Abaye and Rava. We know that the Gemara calls it Abaye and Rava, right? We know Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was the smallest of the Talmidim of Hillel, and he learned Dover Godol v'Dover Koton. He learned great things and small things. Which are the small things? Havayot, Abaye, v'Rava. Havayot means the discussions of Abaye and Rava. One second, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is way hundreds of years before Abaye and Rava, but meaning he learned the Talmudic approach. And this Chaim Nachman Bialik, right, in the Masmid, the famous poem I'm not sure people read, he always says that in the Beis Medrash he always had Abaye and Rava discussing. His view was Abaye and Rava are the ones who created this. If you pay attention to the Gemara, Abaye is called Shita. He collects ideas together. That's why he calls Shita. He takes, says, this and this and this and this people hold the same idea. He collected people who had a similar view. And this is Abaye Verovah. So they are the founders of the Bavli. That's why they are so ubiquitous, meaning they are so... There is a tradition in the Groh that every three blot, you don't have three pages of the Talmud, three folios, without Abaye or Rava being mentioned. Now, it's not really accurate because the Talmud, the division of pages, it's longer pages and smaller pages. But if you create some kind of a distribution, right, and you want to find some kind of a even spreading, Abaye and Rava are unique in the Talmud, that they are throughout the Bavli. So his idea was that Abaye Verovah come and they create a Beis Medrash, and that Beis Medrash, if you look at it, is was in Pumbedita, and the circa of the 4th century, the year 308, is the compilation of the Proto-Talmud. And what they did was they collected not only the Babylonian traditions, they actually collected the Palestinian traditions. There were people coming from Palestine all the time, they are called the Nechutei. The Gemara says they were Nechutei, the people who came traveling. They were the shuttlers. There's so many of these Nechutei in the time of Abaye Verovah, they collected them and they created. Now, if you look at his Sefer, does he have any convincing argument for that? I'm not sure. But I can tell you that this is probably so true that is amazing. Let me tell you something very interesting. I just told you that there are such traditions that they were kept by students on this direct double attribution. This direct double attribution, there are more than 1,200 situations like this in the Bavli. If you go through your computer, you find that 1,200, more than 1,200 direct double attributions. But you know that the Bavli also has something called indirect double attributions. Omar Rav Yehuda Mishmei de Rav. Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav, indirectly. One of them is direct. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. Rav Yehuda says that Rav said. The other one he says in the name of Rav. So Rashi, not the Rishonim, say that Mishmei is much more informal. So the idea is they were not told to keep. Like meaning my rabbi tells me, okay, I would like you to remember X, Y, and Z. I have from Ruderman, I have from Halivni. Things that they told me I want you to keep and to transmit. So I am the one carrying the tradition. That's a direct double attribution. Mishmei is indirect. I overheard. Rashi says, it's not that I saw it directly. I was not in charge of it. There are at least 760 of those indirect double attributions. So the direct double attributions are almost twice as often. But if you look at something interesting, and the one who points out is Shas Cohen, after Abaye Verovah, there are zero direct attributions. There are more than 200 indirect attributions. But any people who lived after Abaye Verovah, you never have a direct attribution. You never have Omar Rav Papa, Omar Rav, Omar Rova. Rav Papa is the Talmud of Rova. He doesn't carry the traditions. Why not? The indirect continued. There were 760 altogether, 200 post Abaye Verovah. Direct attributions, zero. There are a few cases, and that appears to be, but if you find and you look, and I did that work, you look into the manuscripts, it's a mistake. There is zero. It doesn't go down, it goes to zero. Why? And Reb Kiveger, Shas Cohen, points out that Reb Kiveger asks a question or makes a note. It's a note in Shabbat. If anybody wants to know, it's a note in Shabbat. And he says, it's not right. Because after Abaye Verovah, he says, Shas Cohen knows Kol Shas. He says, there is no direct attributions. And the question, why not? According to Halevi's theory, it's very geschmack. Because now it was kept together in a central corporate environment. They created a yeshiva. If you wanted to keep to posterity your ideas, you brought to the academy, and the academy had memorizers. Does anybody know what the name of the memorizers are? Meaning the official gazette of the yeshiva? Huh? It's called the Tana. The Tana was somebody who had a phenomenal memory. But you know what's interesting, and Professor Lieberman here points out, you know what the qualifications for a Tana? You had to have a phenomenal memory and to be actually dumb. Right? The Gemara says, Tanei Tana velo yoda maikomer. The Tana repeats, but he doesn't know what he's saying. And the reason is very simple, right? Because if you have a guy who's too smart, he might decide to change things. He says, you know something, that doesn't sound good. I think we have to, it's like they have Shakespeare translated into Yiddish. And he says, geteicht und gebessert. It's translated and is improved in Yiddish. Translation, okay, don't try to improve Shakespeare in Yiddish. So they got this Tana. The Tana was somebody, Tana, Tana, Veloyoda, Maikomar, is a guy who repeats, doesn't know what he's saying. But this is the way to record. If you wanted to keep, they stopped it. That's why it's zero. It goes now to a central location that now all the Moraim are dealing with each other, directly or indirectly. And that's an amazing raya. It goes to zero. But there is something else interesting. And this is what you have in your sources. The next one. And you look at it. If you look, first of all, source number two. Omar Rav Papi, you see, Rav Papa says, Mishmei de Rova. He says in the name of Rova. Rav Kiva Eiger asks, why doesn't he say Omar Rav Papi, Omar Rova? He goes to Bimedaik, says Shaskoin. Rav Papa is a Talmud of Rava. There is no direct. It's always Mishmei. From now on, from Rava, you never see anybody say Omar Rav Papi, Omar Rava. Doesn't exist. Now, the Marik here, this Tshuva Samarik, we're going to see that there was a fundamental, the Geonim came up with an halacha that you never made sense. You know the halacha is like this. If you have a Talmid, a student, arguing with his Rebbe, who does the halacha follow? The Talmid of the Rebbe. So the halacha is always the Rebbe, ein halacha ketalabi b'makom harav. You don't listen to a student against his Rebbe. But that's only up to Abaye and Rava. From Abaye and Rava, he switches, ilcheta kebatrai. You listen to the later generations. Abaye Verova. Why? So they asked the Marik that. Mishum haitama, pasku ha-geonim ashem asulon et ha-Torah. The geonim which were the ones who gave us the Torah. The me'abaye verova ve'ilach, from Abaye and Rava onwards, ilcheta kebatrai. You listen to the later generations, ve'afilu betalmid neged harav. Even if he's a student against his own teacher, his own master, you listen to the student. And the Rif explains why. We know some people relied on the Yerushalmi against the Bavli because the Yerushalmi is earlier. And the Rif says, no, los viralach. We hold the halacha is like the Bavli against the Yerushalmi. If the Bavli is matir, if the Bavli allows it, we don't care that the Yerushalmi answers. We follow the Bavli. Why? The batrahu. Because it's a later generation. You follow the later. Even though you know that in Talmudic ideas we have this concept of iskat madoiras, generations become smaller and smaller and smaller, but the halacha follows the later generations. And he says, "V'inu havibakin ibnei marofa," because they, the later generations, knows the previous generation, so they know more. Their knowledge becomes growing, becomes cumulative. It's cumulative knowledge. So the later generations know more than the earlier generations. That's what he says. Varei lecha, skip two lines. Afal gav de avira d'Eretz Yisrael machkim. Look, even though in Eretz Yisrael you have Eretz Yisrael, v'chad minayu ketrim, and they are bigger than us, doesn't matter. We follow who? We follow the later generations. Now, skip to the next paragraph. V'chitem im ker afil lifnei abai verov anami. So it's like, why? If we follow the later generations, because they know more, because knowledge becomes accumulated, why do you long for abai verov? Why only Abaye Verova? take a look at this. The other Bible, Rovole Talmidim, Lomdim, El Pika, Balat Rabotayim. The Marik says this idea. Until Abai Verova, each Talmud learned from his Rabbi. Kifi Masha Yushonim Lem, you only knew what your Rabbi knew. So the Talmud was basically a Rabbi plus. Mehema Yushonim Api Rabchiya Verabbi Yosha, all different people. Skip a few lines. But he says, Achaz min Abraito, Kul Mishnah, the Biafle min Abraham. And then he says, Mashma Shemibye. And then he says, one second, let me just see it. Kola Deus. Aval me Abai Verov Eila, Lamdu Kola Deus. From Abai Verova, they learned the entire corpus. Retzonoloime Mishnat Rabchie Veraboisha. They not only learned from the Rabbi, they learned the entire corpus of Talmudic learning. Clearly, he says the same idea. If you want to know Alpi Machshova in Jewish mysticism and etc., what happened at the same time of Abai Verova? So if you look, follow the Rambam writes in Ilchot Kiddush HaChodesh, U'mimatai itchilu kol Yisrael lechashev b'cheshbon. From when do we go and we calculate the calendar and we do not look for witnesses? Misov chachemei Talmud bet shecharva eretz Yisrael l'shasham beidin kavua. Aval bimei chachmei ha-mishnah, but in the times of the Mishnah, v'chen bimei chachmei ha-talmud, ad yemei Abai Verova, until Abai Verova, kviyat Eretz Yisrael, so they would rely on the witnesses that came to Eretz Yisrael. The cheshbon was only when they didn't have anybody in Eretz Yisrael. When they stopped taking witnesses, and they calculated the cheshbon, you know from when it was? From Abai and Rova. Abai and Rova are considered the beginning of Torah Shebal Peh, in its entirety, the creation of the Bavli, of this virtual base medrash, the idea that all the rabbis, they might have never have seen each other, but their ideas are discussed in context. That's Abai Verova. Says in Digra de Kala, to the Bnei Soschar, Rechush ben Achi Avram, that he comes to save the Rechush of Lot ben Achi Avram. Rechush Ben Achi, Reish Bei Aleph, Roshei Tevot Rava. Katav Arizal, Shaita Gnuza Lesham Nitzos. In the Milchom of the four kings, when you unify the kings, you had five kings against four kings against five kings, that you had this unification, that they created some kind of a group that went to attack. This is the Nishmas of Rava. Rava is born there. That's why Rechush ben Avram, Rechush ben Avram is Rova. And he explains, on the next one, on the Tfus, Yoshon, v'zeh soy, the second line, v'zeh soy t'sharomaz b'zeh apar sh'varigas ha'mloche v'eshma Avram kinish ba'ochiv v'et kol Rechusho ben Achi Avram she'katav Arizal b'sever kavonos u'roshe tevus, Rova. Right? Sheboi soperek niskaven Avrom loitzin nitzo sherova sheatakua belot. Asks the Bnei Soschar, v'koshe, ma inya lekan? Okay? So he explains, aval edidi nicha shebezu ha-melchom haya mitasek Avrom loitzin nitzo shel Torah shebal peh. This war, that Avrom Avinu takes the initiative to fight a war, and he organizes a group. This is the beginning of Torah shebal peh. That's why he's bovel. And Torah Shebal Peh, these discussions, these group discussions, like Avraham Avinu, he didn't go by himself. There were milchoma of two conclaves of kings. This group discussion, this group dynamics, was Abai Verova. So that's why he comes to take Abai Verova. And the case came from Bavel, Amar Afel Melech Bavel, right? Kmo Shemidi Darishon Shemitzrayim. And he, so this is Abai Verova. So Abai Verova, they see Abai Verova at that moment. And this is the contribution of Yitzchok Isaac Levi, that when you look at the Bavli, this chidush of the Bavli, this idea of the Bavli, which is this virtual based marriage that all the ideas are talked together, they're not rabbis learning in different contexts, but everybody is in conversation, is the chidush of Abai and Rova. And this is Torah Shebal Peh. This is the Bovel, the Milchom of the Melochim. Now, One of the issues of the Bavli is that the Bavli has two genres, besides Halakha and Agadah, but two, in every page that you learn, there are two genres that you have to be aware of. Anybody who has any literary sensitivity realizes that the Bavli has statements attributed to people. Omar Aviuda, Omar Rav, Abaye says, but a great portion of the Bavli is anonymous. It's called the Stama de Gemara. Chazal in the Rishonim is called the anonymous part of the Bavli. And the anonymous part of the Bavli is a great portion of the Bavli, that you don't know who it is. Not only that, the language is very, very unique, as we're going to see and learn, because this will be a big focus of our discussions. The language is invariably in Aramaic, and it's always something, it's a dialectical, it's explanation, it's tentative. The Amoraim, when they speak directly, clear, concisely, very terse. The great majority, if you realize that the Bavli is a combination between Hebrew and Aramaic, and we're going to see some Persian. But most of the language is Hebrew and Aramaic. Interestingly enough, the statements of the Moraim are terse, attributed, and many of them, if not the vast majority, are in Hebrew. The anonymous part of the Bavli is tentative, is dialectical, and is Aramaic. And the question is, why is the Bavli anonymous? Who is trying to hide himself behind the Bavli? So Halevi, because this is an issue, this anonymity, the anonymity of the Bavli, is one of the unique aspects of the Bavli, that there is this anonymous voice out there. Who is that? Are they trying to hide something? Why don't you say who you are? Not only that, you realize that in Halakha, the pedigree of who says what is extremely important. Because the validity, I just told you, Abaye Varov, you have to know how, you know by the generations who is earlier, who is later. So those considerations are very important. So why is the Bavli anonymous? So Halevi applies the same idea in the Mishnah. You know that the Mishnah has something called Stam Mishnah. Some parts of the Mishnah, let's say the first opinion of the Mishnah, is anonymous. Doesn't say who it is. We call it, anybody who learned in Yeshiva, it's called Tana Kama, the first Tana, also anonymous. But the Rishonim already explained why in the Mishnah there is anonymity. Because it's consensus. The view of the consensus, when everybody agrees, you don't have to list 200 people. So that's why it's anonymous. Anonymous means that's what the consensus is. Any views which are attributed are unique views of different Tanaim, different rabbis. So he wants to say that the Bavli, because his whole theory is that the Bavli follows the Yerushalmi, follows the Mishnah. It's the same process. So the anonymous part of the Bavli are the consensus ideas of the Bavli. Now, if anybody studied the Bavli, knows that that's almost an impossibility to say. And we're going to see the Rishonim, because what happens if you have an anonymous part of the Bavli arguing with somebody who is attributed? Who do you follow? You don't assume that this is consensus. By the way, the Bavli has very little consensus. I think the whole idea of the Bavli, that there is no consensus. But his idea was that the Stama existed. And if you pay attention, I'm going to go back to our sources, okay? Let me give you an example. And I'm sorry, it's a little later. Here. Basechet Baba Kama, the next one, the next source. Achamai. The Gemara in Baba Kama wants to know there is in Baba Kama the damages. There are such a thing called Ovis and Toldis. There are primary and secondaries. And the question is, do the secondaries have the same halacha as the primaries or not? Because there's a difference between different places. So Rav Papa says, Yesh mehem kayotze bahem. Rav Papa says, look in Hebrew, a few of them, the secondaries are like the primaries, v'yesh mehem lav kayotze bahem. And some of them are not the same. This is what Rav Papa said. So then the Gemara anonymously starts explaining, some of them yes, some of them no. Which one? Yes, and which one no? It's all in Aramaic, and it's all tentative. Ela lavka yotzeim behem deomar Rav Papa, v'chikom Rav Papa told the regel. The Gemara tries in every single possibility, what is Rav Papa talking about? It's a discussion about Rav Papa anonymously. But what's unique about it? Rav Papa spoke in Hebrew. Yesh ba'em kayotze ba'em. Rav Papa is very terse. Six words. Right? Yesh ba'em kayotze ba'em. Yesh ba'em lav kayotze ba'em. Some yes, some no. The Bavli anonymously starts to discuss which one's yes, which one's no. And it goes tentatively and it goes into a circle and it comes back. This is how the Stama works. That anonymous voice of the Bavli is always tentative, is always explanatory, it is always dialectic, in Aramaic, and very verbose. So Halevi wants to say that this unique structure of the Bavli existed already at the time of Abaye and Rava. This style of anonymous work and attributed work, they're not two separate works. That is how Abaye and Rava decided to structure the Bavli. Why did they do that? Anonymous consensus, non-anonymous unique views. But it doesn't work. Anybody who studies the Bavli realizes that this is almost an impossibility. Okay? But this is his first approach. That's step number one. The step number two in the Bavli is that this idea of Abaye Rava continued from the 4th century all the time until there was the editing of the Bavli, because the traditions kept growing. The people kept giving to the Tana, and the Tana kept growing. And there were several yeshivas. There was Pupedita and there was Sura until the 5th century. And if you look in your timeline, this is the death of Rava in 351. And now in the year 391 and 392, the court of Ravashi in Sura creates a conclave of rabbis to edit the Talmud. His second step on the process is that Ravashi is the one who edits the Bavli. He does the work of Rebbe. He takes the Bavli, he checks, he goes ahead and he collects more material and he seals it. He passes away in the year 421, right? 422, 426 is the end of the Ravashi era. Now he does Ravashi to do exactly the same job as Rebbe. And I told you, where does he go? That's the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Omar Avada, this is the next source. Omar Avada, Mimois Rebbe ad Ravashi lo matzino Torah gdula b'makomecha. The Gemara says, from the times of Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi until Ravashi, we never had Torah and wealth in the same place. So they were unique. So says, why is the Gemara trying to say it? From Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi until Ravashi, you never had Torah and wealth in one place, because you needed power, you needed wealth to create unity among the rabbis. You needed somebody very powerful. So his idea is, who can create a pseudo aguda to create all the rabbis together, or try to put all the rabbis together in one place to edit something? Had to be somebody very respected and very powerful. That's what the Gemara is saying in Sanhedrin, that from the times of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi until Ravashi, you never had that. So he gives Ravashi as the supreme editor of the Bavli. But he said, this is a great leap of faith. Because as you'll see, the Bavli, in my view, was never edited. The Bavli is an organic work. Very much the difference between Encyclopedia Britannica and the Wikipedia. Wikipedia is organic. Encyclopedia Britannica Rabbi Yitzchok Isaac HaLevi came from the time that for a work to have validity, it needs to be edited in a central place. Today, the 21st century, we know that after blockchain, distributive technologies are more valid than central technologies. So, but his view is the 19th century, you needed somebody centralized, somebody as the editor, and he makes Rav Ashi the editor. Now, he creates this Beit Avad, this central location. He positions that was in Sura. And that is the process of the Bavli that is edited by somebody. Now, this are so many assumptions that there was the Bavli was edited. You're going to see that the Bavli probably wasn't edited. We know that there are such a thing in the Bavli called sugyot mukhlafot. There are contradictory sugyot in the Bavli which are irreconcilable. Tosfot in Daf Nun Beit in Menachot lists. Tosfot is very creative. He asks kashas and he always gives a terence. But Tosfot, the Ramban also, got stuck that the Bavli has irreconcilable sugyot. If there was a central editing, why should you have irreconcilable sugyot? Not only that. If you look at the Bavli, there are five masechtot in the Bavli who don't fit the mode. They are called by the Rishonim and by everybody who learns it, masechtot mishunot. They are the strange masechtot. Nedarim, Nazir, Tmura, Kritut, and Meila. If the Bavli was centrally edited, how do you have five odd masechtot? Doesn't make sense. How do you have sugyot afuchot, the irreconcilable sugyot? But this, he wanted to show, but one thing he shows, which is so creative for Yitzchok Isaac HaLevi, he says, I'll show you that Rav Ashi has a different role from any other Amora. And he says, you know why? Because he was the editor of the Bavli. What is Yisrael? Look at something very interesting. That Masechet Shabbat 87b. He says, first I'm going to give you what he says, and then we'll see it inside. He's the only person that is not involved. Somebody A asks a question to B, and B gives an answer, but instead of addressing A, he addresses Rav Ashi. I was like, oh, Rav Ashi. Look at this. Toshma, the Gemara has a Shaila, the Gemara brings, come here, let me bring a Raya. Toshma, the Gemara continues. Says the Gemara like this. Omar Rav Papa Toshma, continues Rav Papa Toshma, and then go to the next page. So Rav Papa brings a raya, the Gemara brings a raya, very good, right? It's a whole discussion, brings rayas. Omar Rav Chavivi Mechozna, Rav Chavivi Mechozna says to Rav Ashi Toshma. Why does he say to Rav Ashi? Everybody's bringing a raya. Here, Rav Ashi is brought into the game as an addressee of an answer. He didn't ask the question. What is he doing here? And this happens all the time. And the only one, listen, this is somebody who's doing this without computers. So today is very easy for me to check. I can check in the computer. But this is before the computer. He says, in the whole Shas, there is nobody who gets addressed with an answer not being involved there. Only Rav Ashi does that. Why is that? He says, you know why? Because he's the editor. So they were concluding the work. So somebody said, oh, I have an answer. Rav Ashi, please get my answer in it. It's not out of the collections. You as the editor, please take my answer in. The only reason Rav Ashi gets addressed answers without asking any questions is because Rav Ashi is the editor of the Bavli. That's what he says. And he says, this is the Raya. Now, does it mean that Rav Ashi was editing the Bavli? Clearly, Rav Ashi, in some ways, cemented the Bavli. There's no question Rav Ashi was unique. But to take this and assuming that he did a full editing and he sealed the Bavli, that you couldn't actually go afterwards, that's a leap of faith. Now, scholars today also say very interesting that before Ravashi, you have Amoraic ideas, but you see the Bavli has many things which are stories of the Jewish court. The Jewish court did this. In Bob Metzi, anybody who learns, he always quotes stories of the Jewish court. The Jewish court cases, the case law, is only post-Ravashi. There are no case laws before Ravashi. Why not? He says that because Ravashi was editing the Bavli. So he not only collected the Amoraic traditions, he collected applied law, which is case law. So he took the case, court cases, and he joined into the Bavli. This is what Ravashi did. Okay, this is the Chidush of Ravashi. Now, the problem is that the Bavli has a lot of things post-Ravashi. And if you look at the Igeret Rav Shir Hagaon, Igeret Rav Shir Hagaon never, ever says that Ravashi edited or concluded the Bavli. You know who he says concluded the Bavli? Somebody called Ravina. But there are two Ravinas. There was a Ravina, which is a friend of Ravashi, who passed before Ravashi passed away. Says Rav Shir Hagaon, the one who concluded the Bavli is somebody called Ravina Bar Avuna. Those are the post-Ravashi editions, and this was in the year 500, 75 years later. That's Ravina Bar Avuna. And this is the one who says in Rav Shir Hagaon, Istayim Talmud, the Bavli ends with Ravina. So this idea that Ravashi did, the question is what's in between. So Halevi wants to say that the court of Ravashi outlived him and went all the way to this person called Ravina. So that court stayed. So if you look at your timeline, 422 is Ravashi's death, and the closing of the Talmud is in 475 when the Yeshiva of Sura closed. He says the Yeshiva of Sura was the central location of this conclave, and in 475 it closed. Now, our Girsa of the Rav Shir Hagaon says that it happened in the year 500. Halevi needs to change this to the year 475, because otherwise it's so long, the post-Ravashi era, 75 years, it's too long. So he wants to make it as short as possible. So he moves to the year 475. Now, why does it close the yeshiva in 475? This is one of the most creative ideas he has, and I'm going to show, we're going to go through next time. But he closes the yeshiva at 475. So in Halevi's view, the Bavli ends in the year 475 because Rav Shir Hagaon writes that in the closing, the Ravina Bar Avuna closed the Bavli when the yeshiva of Sura closed because it needed to be in the central place. And the yeshiva transitioned from Sura to Pumpedita. And we go to the third level. Now, Halevi needs to say that because Ravashi is the editor, he wants to make at least as short as possible. He makes the period after Ravashi passes away to the conclusion of Bavli to 50 years. And it was the same group of people. Ravashi died, but there were a lot of people that stayed there. Ravashi lived for a very long life. We know that Shir Hagaon says that Ravashi actually went through the Bavli twice. There were two versions of the Bavli. But his view is that Ravashi died and people in his court stayed up to when the Yeshiva of Sura closed, in his view, in the year 475. You know the problem is? The problem is, and with this we'll finish, I'm sorry that we're going a little longer. If you look at the Igeret Rav Shir Hagaon, okay? The first one, Umalach b'mechasya Rav Tivyomi d'umar bar Ravashi. After Ravashi passes away in the year 425, the Rosh Yeshiva that comes in his place is his son, right? Rav Tivyoimi is called Rav Tervin Mar Bar Ravashi, and he died. Then there was somebody called Rabba Tosfa. His idea, why is he called Rabba Tosfa? So Halevi is very creative. He says Tosfa is additive. So you see that in those years, they didn't do anything new because Ravashi was the editor and Ravashi was dead. So they did just Tosefet. They just added to it. But it's a mistake because Tosfa is actually the name of the city. So that's a new, like a little invention of Halevi. U'be'arba b'shabta, so says they get it, on a Wednesday, Yud Gimel Kislev, in the 13th of Kislev, in the year 500, that's our Girsa, Shachnev Ravina Breid Ravuna. Ravina, son of Ravuna, dies. The who Ravina? This is the Ravina that the Gemara says, the who Sofero. This is the end of Hero. Halevi wants to change this to the year 475. And he says a mistake on the Geret. But you know the problem is? Because in the year 475, Yud Gimel Kislev didn't fall on a Wednesday, fell on Motzei Shabbos. So that doesn't work. You realize that today with the computers, that doesn't work. But that's what he does. So according to, you should remember, that's what we leave off today, tonight. According to Halevi, I'm sorry, the Bavli ends when Surah moves either in the year 475 or the year 500, and that's the ceiling of the Bavli. And these are the two steps, created by Abaye Verova, edited by Ravashi, with his extended court from the year 422 to the year 475. And the year 475 is the ceiling of the Bavli. And then we're going to have two more stages, which we're going to go next week. Not next week, in 2 weeks, we are going to fight to finish Halevi, and we're going to start in his counterparty, which is David Weiss Halivni, which is the approach of the organic Bavli. But his view is that the Bavli is a much, much later work, which is how the academia views the Bavli today. And then hopefully Mr. Shem will go to some kind of an intermediary position.